Well, hello and welcome to this edition of the KKFI Arts Magazine Show. I'm Michael Hogue, your host. Glad to have you with us on this Monday. Oh, it appears to be it's going to be a nice day, I think. Sure looks like it. It might be a bit warm. It's in the mid-80s right now. It's just great. As you listen to the Arts Magazine Show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station, right here in Kansas City. It's great for outdoor events. That's the kind of weather, and guess what? There are outdoor events coming up. Probably the most significant one of the summer, the Heart of America Shakespeare Festival. It's 25th year of doing Shakespeare in the park, always in the same park. Director, as I speak to and look right at, Director Sydney Garrett, to ask that question.
That's right, Michael. Southmoreland Park, right near the Nelson Atkins Museum at Cleaver Boulevard between Oak and Warwick Streets for 25 years.
Yeah, if we have time towards the end, I want to ask her how that all got started. It was Marilyn Strauss, was in New York and all of that. But on that later. You're doing Hamlet this year.
Yes. Yeah,
just one of the more popular of Shakespeare shows.
Yes, it's possibly the greatest play written in the English language. So it's time to do it again. We've done it one other time in our festival history, and that was 14 years ago. So we're a little overdue, I think, to revisit this incredible epic story.
Oh, sure. Sydney is directing this show, but she's also the executive artistic director of the festival. So you have a lot of input on everything that goes on.
I do, yes. I have a lot of input and responsibility and a great joy in getting to do work that I'm passionate about.
Yeah, you do. You do. Well, she brought along some of her favorite people. It's always nice to speak with Jan Rogge, who this year is playing Queen Gertrude. Yes. In the show. Sid is, she's lived and worked all over the country, really. I recall San Francisco, New York. Where all else? She doesn't remember.
Milwaukee,
yeah, all over the place. She's also, and I love to throw this in, probably won't like my saying it, one of the owners of the Green Bay Packers. And is a big Packers fan. I know the last time you were on, you were kidded about your TiVoing of the game when you were working.
That's right. It's funny. What's his name? Peter Nichols on the morning show on
which
ABC
station?
Here in town. Oh, uh-huh. That was the first thing he said to me when I was there advertising. I was promoting a show, and I think we talked about 2 minutes about the Packers because he's from Wisconsin. So,
well, this is the hardest summer, but I'm sure they'll have an outstanding season coming up. How many years have you been with the festival now? You've been a number of times.
Yeah, I'd say not the first season, but when was R&J?
The fifth year.
The fifth year. So 20.
What does your husband do that you travel and live so many places?
Oh, boy. He's an SAP consultant.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
He has one of those normal jobs.
Yeah. Kind of an IT. So that's why we got to go to different places. And now he just works on the East Coast. So he's gone 5 days out of the week. And he flies back and forth. And we're able to have a lovely home and come back to the Midwest where our
he's able to see you on stage as much as possible.
Yeah. So it works out. They say those are the happiest marriages at times.
Okay. I wouldn't know. You'll have to tell me.
Great life experience playing the queen of a king who's a murderer, I guess, right, Jane?
Yeah,
that's a good point. Yeah, a lot goes into that, of course.
Well, before we get to Jake, because he's played Hamlet before, what's unique, too, is Mr. Walker, is that I played this two other times. So I played it with Sid the last time. We did it 14 years ago, and then at Cornell University. So it's interesting. It is the best play, hands down.
Was the approach of the people at Cornell University, an Ivy League school, ladies and gentlemen, was their approach different from Sid's approach?
Well, it was indoor, so that was real different.
Oh, well, it's not as good then.
It's not as good. We did have four other professional actors in it, then the rest were students. But they hardly cut anything because it was academic. You know, they wanted to leave everything in, so it was much longer and much, you know. But yeah, but it's fascinating when you get a new cast, you get different insights. You know, Shakespeare allows you to make certain interpretations, and even with Sid this time, you know, things are different depending on the actors. So
she might want to have taken a different approach with it this year. Do you sometimes do that?
Always. Yeah. I mean, every time you rarely do you get to do the same play twice, and only in Shakespeare, I think, has that been pretty much my experience. So I've learned more since, you know, we did this 14 years ago. I'm more mature and wiser, hopefully. I have different insights, and then the cast completely informs the direction that everything takes and their choices, and helping to shape all of those choices and tell the overall story. So it's different every time.
Yeah, I can imagine an actor making a different choice would change things a little bit.
And especially the Hamlet.
Especially, yes.
I mean, the Hamlet.
It's, you know, the play is called Hamlet. Every time there's a play where the title character is named Richard III or, you know, Macbeth, I mean, those characters drive the story. And, it, you know, so you have to really see what's happening with that central character and then everything around them, you know. But their interpretation is really going to shape a lot of choices and decisions that are made.
Sure. Jake Walker is with us as well. He's playing Horatio this time, but in your credits, at least Sid wrote me, that you'd played Hamlet in the past yourself, and now you're Hamlet's best friend.
Yeah, and it's great. It's the play is amazing, and it's a real gift to be in it in any role, and it's kind of a magical thing to see an actor put on the mantle of this most human character. Yeah, so it's a blast. Yeah.
And it was really different, the one that he was in. It was Kansas City Actors Theater, and it was simplified. I mean, it was... That's not the good word. But...
Well, it had to be a smaller production.
Well, it was more modern. Yeah, it was stripped down. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
And it was fascinating. And the KCAT crowd... sometimes they'll go to Shakespeare, so they were kind of, some of them were new to it, but found it very clear and really exciting and interesting. Because, in fact, the costumes were, they were old and new.
It was a mixture.
Yeah, it was a mixture.
But you, my friend, you look like somebody from the hood, right? You had like a hoodie.
I did have a hoodie. And a picture of Mark Robbins on my shirt.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm gunning for him.
But, you know, the thing about Hamlet is that, you know, this is my third time. I was in it with Jan and Sydney 14 years ago as Guildenstern. And then as Hamlet a couple years ago, and now as Horatio this summer at the park. And, you know, and I've seen every movie, you know, of course, playing the role, you kind of obsess over. I watched every movie. I watched YouTube clips of Richard Burton. So coming into this, I feel like, I know this play pretty well. I've done it. This is my third time. But, you know, talking with other actors in the show and exploring it on my own, I learn something new about it every single day. About all that, you know, Nathan, who plays Hamlet, Nathan Darrow, we talk about it every day. You know, we talk a lot about, well, there's what the characters are saying, and then there's what is going on underneath that. And that is an unending well of what human beings feel when they're in moments of crisis or in moments of grief. There's an unending well of options and discoveries, and it's so lush.
Acting choices.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
And they're very good friends, which I think is really great.
Yeah.
You guys are good friends.
We are.
It's nice because Hamlet, you know, he's such a lonely character. You know, I mean, he's got the brunt of the lines and everything, and I think it's really, it's nice that.
It's also about, in this play, who can Hamlet trust in the story? Because there's, you know, he's from the very beginning in grief, and then unhappiness, the woman he's been in love with, and, you know, he can't even deal with his own life right now. He can't deal with her. She's being told not to see him anymore. His own mother, he's furious and frustrated and betrayed by his own mother in his heart because of her quick marriage after his father's death to his own uncle. So there's just so much going on. So I just keep saying to Jake, you know, you're the heart. You're his heart. You're the one person he can turn to and know that you have his back and that he can rely on you, you know, and he, it's the most important relationship for him in the sense of just having someone to turn to at all times to reinforce and help him see his way and be there just whatever he needs, which is important.
There's probably people in the audience who have heard of Hamlet, don't exactly know what the storyline is, so who would like to do a brief thumb sketch? And that's hard, I know, because there's so many facets to it. How about Jake? Since you... A brief thumb sketch. Yeah. People will often say, in fact, someone over this past weekend said to me, now that's the one with the ghost, right?
Yeah. Yes.
That's the one, one of the ones with the ghost.
Yeah.
So when we meet Hamlet, father, the king of Denmark, has very recently died. And very shortly after that, Hamlet's mother, the queen, remarries Hamlet's uncle, his father's brother.
Claudius.
Claudius, played by the brilliant actor Bruce Roach. And Horatio and some of the guards tell Hamlet, we saw the ghost of your dad, and we think you should go and see if maybe he has something to say to you. And he does, and the ghost does have things to say to him, and I don't know, is there spoilers?
I think there can be a spoiler with 400.
So we find out that...
in the public domain, right?
Through the ghost, we find out that Claudius, Hamlet's uncle, now stepdad, actually murdered Hamlet's father.
Mm.
And so Hamlet is sent... tasked with avenging his father's murder. And so we see Hamlet, which, you know, most Shakespeare scholars will say or even theatrical scholars will say that it's the most human character in Shakespeare's canon. We see him sort out his own feelings and his own life and his own opinion of what life is about, and the difference between vengeance and justice, we get to kind of through Hamlet's self-examination, we can examine ourselves and our own lives, and it's a daggum miracle.
Yeah.
Every night,
some of you out there who think you have complicated lives, and I know many of you do. So does Prince Hamlet. And
big
some
time.
Of the scenarios may match mm-hmm. quite a bit.
Well, especially the skull is so significant. You always see Hamlet with the skull.
Yeah.
But this was somebody that he knew when he picks up. He just happens to pick up. And it's like, I just couldn't imagine somebody that you loved and that was dear to your heart. And he picks up a skull, and that was that person.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just got a lovely monologue with that, and that's why I think that's shown a lot, because there's something so philosophical
mm-hmm.
about it. And it is a family drama, too.
Very much so, in our version in particular.
Yeah.
I mean, the play originally, as written, would run 4 hours to see it. So this version we're starting early this year, so we'll be starting at 7:30 instead of 8 o'clock, which is our usual start time. 7:30 we begin the play, and we should be done by 10:30 with a 15-minute intermission. So that's quite a significant cut, and which takes out some of the larger political overtones of what's happening in the actual play. Denmark has been at war with Norway, and there's a whole other world that's happening out there that's bigger and more political. But
we ain't doing that.
We're not doing that, because at its heart, you know, these are royal people, and it's a court and all of that. But at its heart, it's really a family drama. I mean, these people are very close to each other. So everything, you know, when it's like I always say, if your brother betrays you, it's much more significant than a stranger doing it. We mm-hmm. expect strangers to do potentially horrible things to us. We hope they don't, but you know, you want to trust those people that are closest to you. And Shakespeare gives us all of these incredible, rich, emotional, you know, stories that are so dynamic and powerful because they speak to the eternal, you know, Cain and Abel. They speak to that never-ending resonance of, you know, humans madly and passionately in love and madly and passionately in hate. You know, I mean, they just, you know, it's so strong.
Yeah.
And this play goes through so many, you know, it hits all the emotional notes throughout, and inquiry, and, you know, struggling through to try to rationalize and find reasons for and understand and try to motivate action out of something. You know, there's this, oh, Hamlet's this inactive, you know, he can't make up his mind. It's like, who could? Mm-hmm. If my father were slain today and I found out who his murderer was, I'm not a murderer. So if I'm not in the moment of a passionate moment where I see the person murdering him right there, you know, where it's a self-defense thing or a defense thing, I mean, would I just be able to go, okay, yep, I'm going to go murder him right now? You know, and that's what the play is about, this, you know, his process of getting to a place where he could even do that, you know, because if you're not a murderer in your heart, it's hard to just be one.
Yeah, to be or not to be, to do or not to do. I mean, it's those questions of, do I act now? Do I wait? Do I hesitate? And it's him becoming a man, really, too. I'll say coming of age, but becoming a man, too.
And what kind of a man does he want to be?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it starts off, too, not only the marriage of his mom, his second marriage, but he's not the king. Usually you give it to the son.
The succession would go to the son.
So then there's that part of it, too. So it just stems on all these different levels of betrayal and confusion for this young man.
Really does. We're speaking about the Heart of America Shakespeare Festival. We have with us Sydney Garrett, the director, Jan Roget, who plays the role of Queen Gertrude. Old habits die
hard. My former life.
Old habits die hard.
When I was a dancer.
Jake Walker, who plays the role of Horatio in the show. It opens tomorrow night.
We have our first preview Tuesday night. We have previews, actually, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Those are open to the public, of course, and we welcome the audience. But that does mean we're still in rehearsal during the day this week so that we can continue to hone the show. And our official opening night is Friday the 16th. But, yeah, come on down.
They will still get notes.
Just a few.
Do they get notes periodically through the show as well, or do the notes stop?
We will be done rehearsing as of Thursday. There may be notes given by stage management, tweaks here and there, or just you know,
something
things
goes
that
wrong,
sometimes you have to fix things, you know, or sure, something has to be shifted a little bit. Yeah.
Oh, sure. Now you mentioned the earlier starting time of 7:30. But does that necessitate the moving of all the preliminary events, in which you have some good preliminary events? Do they start earlier as well?
We do. The park will still open at 6 p.m. every night, and then we have Show Talk, and which is Dr. Felicia Landre and Phil Blue Owl Hooser, who will both be giving pre-show talks, talking about the play so people will get a good understanding of it. And then we have our teen troupe, Team Shakespeare, an amazing group of kids that have two different companies that will perform parodies on alternating nights of the show. So you'll get a funny version of Hamlet that will at least tell you the story in their own
funny mock
way.
They mock us.
I think
Gertrude is a soccer mom.
Yeah. She is, and it's really hilarious, actually. Yeah.
Did you like that?
I did not see it, I am not going to.
She just heard about it.
She's not able to see it now. She has to remain hidden away.
And Mary Traylor, who Sid hired to design the costumes, is gorgeous.
Yeah. Yes. Let me just say, the design for the show is High Baroque, which is a very, think of Louis the Sun King, that sort of look. So it's lush, it's overblown in some respects. Everything is very gilded. The set is gorgeous and has levels and depth which allow lights to come through in a completely interesting and amazing way. I think the show looks absolutely gorgeous. It does look similar to, but more overly ornate than our production of Othello, which people may remember, which was also in a similar period. But it's about a court that is extremely fancy, overdone, overblown. So contrast that with a prince who's wearing all black still for his father, surrounded by color and gold and golden goblets, and, you know, just this sense of the overdone
decadence.
Yeah.
And the men, I think, are even more so with their buttons and their lace
and wigs.
They're just, I mean, it is amazing. They are the peacocks of society.
Yes. It's
so
true.
I mean, the women look good, but the men, oh my gosh.
Oh, you're pretty shiny up there, Jane. Yeah, she's pretty gorgeous. I do want to say, too, that it's great to, I mean, the entire cast is incredible. They are, it's an amazing depth of talent and skill that, you know, many of these people know and have carried shows on their own. You know, that's just having that kind of deep casting has been really incredible.
As usual, you have a cast of Kansas City's finest. Yes. You want to throw out some names?
I do. I want to start with Nathan Darrow, who was with us for 3 seasons and then has since gone on to other things. He is from here, as you may remember, and I've worked with him several times at the festival and also at the Unicorn Theater. He moved on, and now he comes into my living room on TV, which is always fun to see your friends on TV in your own house. He's been on Netflix series House of Cards. He was the much beloved Meacham character. He's Mr. Freeze on Gotham. He's been on the show Billions, where he's a neurotic trader and he
preacher.
And Jan says the show Preacher, which that's the one I haven't seen yet.
My niece let me know about that.
Yes. And then he May 20th, they just the HBO movie Wizard of Lies came out with Robert De Niro and Michelle Pfeiffer as Bernie and Ruth Madoff, and Nathan played the younger Madoff's son, had a really significant role in that. It's really nicely done. So,
yeah,
and now here he is back home playing Hamlet and climbing this mountain with us all, and it's been pretty incredible. So, Nathan's, it's just great to have him and have a period of time between us to kind of, he's certainly grown in his craft and, you know, has become a different, more mature person, as we all have.
People
and so,
may be coming just to see him, which I don't know, maybe frightening for him, I don't know.
Oh, I think it's great, you know. I think it's great when you're, any work that you do can enhance other work, you know. He loves being here, I think he's really enjoying working with some friends he's known for a long time, and Jake and he have been friends, of course, very close. Yeah. He's got a lot of friends here, and he's got family here. Yeah. And so just our cast, you know, Jan, Jake, Bruce Roach, John Rensenhaus is the ghost of Hamlet's father, Matt Rapport as the grave digger. He's just hilarious and wonderful and plays Ronaldo as well, so he's got to play 2 roles. Mark Robbins is the player King.
The 2 newbies.
We have Matt Schwader and Hillary Clemens. They are playing Laertes and Ophelia, but they are married in real life. So in the show, they play brother and sister. Hillary is actually from here, too. She was a child actor on our stage years and years ago, and now she's
married. Her in shows when I was in high school. Mm-hmm. I was friends with an actor who's also done the festival, who was Rosencrantz when Jan and I did it 14 years ago, Henry Vick. And I saw him in plays at Rockhurst, and Hillary was in the plays at Rockhurst because it was an all. So I've seen her in Pippin and Music Man, and
she's our tragic heroine.
Lots of synchronicity going on here.
Yes, it's true. It's having people back. You know, having. I mean, Hillary's had a homecoming as well. They've moved here, so it's great to have them. Darren Kennedy and Colin Vorbeck are Rosencrantz and Guildenstern, and I'm not sure which is which right now. So, which is a big joke in the show. I'm kidding, of course. It's always when I'm trying to think of names. I'm thinking about the big picture so I can see who else is on the stage with us. Justin Barron, who's new to the festival stage. He plays Marcellus. And Josh LeBrun and R.H. Wilhoit and Freddie Aceveda, who's a UMKC grad student.
Mauricio.
We have Mauricio Miranda, who is from Lima, Peru, originally.
And Wyatt McCall,
who plays a very funny Osric. We have Leah and Hattie Wilcheski and Roan Ricker, who are 3 of our former students from the Shakespeare Festival Education Programs, and now they're on our big stage. So Kendra Keller, just a great bunch of actors.
Robert Gibby Brand
as Polonius.
Well,
I know. See, it's not from lack of love of the work. I just can't remember.
It's
He's a brilliant
cast.
Polonius. Yeah, it's a big cast.
Shows start. I get officially opens Thursday or Friday?
Official opening is Friday night. There will be a show June 13th through July 2nd. We do not play on Monday nights. So every night, Tuesday through Sunday, June 13th through July 2nd at 7:30 is showtime.
It's a nice long run, so you can get out to the park to see that.
Now, say if there's a rain out, do we have another show on Monday?
Sid has told me before, we don't even think about it.
I don't think there's going to be a
rain. We just don't allow for it. No. We do have, you know, the festival remains free. We do gratefully accept donations at the gate. If you would like a reserved chair down front or Blanket Space down front reserved. Those are $25 each. You can call in and get those. But it's free seating on the lawn, so if you want to bring your own chairs, your own blankets, you can just find your place up in the lawn. We do have food available there. They can purchase delicious food. This year we'll have Laotian-inspired food from this amazing Laos chef from Laos who's making some of those, and also burgers, that kind of thing. Hot dogs. We also have kettle corn out there, which is very popular and kind of carnival food, we call it. But wine and beer available. So, you know, if you just want to come out and throw down a blanket and buy your food there, it's all available for you.
You've had more events this year, more than before, as I recall.
This 25th year, let me tell you. Some genius, me, thought, hey, why don't we do 25 for the 25th? So I started talking to our arts partners in the community, Kansas City Repertory Theater, Kansas City Ballet, Kansas City Symphony, Johnson County Community College, and then a host of other places and events. We were trying to do 25 different things this year that had some inspiration from Shakespeare. Yes, worked with the ballet, with the symphony, and it's been an incredible year just doing a variety of collaborations with other organizations and community events that focused on Shakespeare in some way and hopefully brought us to a new audience, people that weren't even aware that we existed or when I didn't think I liked Shakespeare, but maybe I do, which, you know, that happens all the time. It's like, oh, I do like this. Look, who knew? So that's what we do at the Shakespeare Festival. We open people's eyes to the fact that Shakespeare is not a boring and horrible subject in school. In fact, it is incredibly relevant and resonant dramatic literature that once they see it, they will be moved, touched, entertained, enlightened, and they love it. And they're every year, many people come up to me and say, I had no idea. I had no idea. I didn't even know this was here. Now I'm here. I'm always coming. Mm-hmm. It's incredible.
You know, it can be done and be boring. It can be done and be exciting as well. It depends on how it's done and who does it.
It's true. We also have summer camps for kids if anybody wants their kids to learn and acquaint themselves with Shakespeare before they encounter it in school. We have a whole spate of summer Shakespeare camps for kids 8 to 18. Sorry. Go to the website, kcshakes.org.
kcshakes.org. The gates open, you said, at 6 o'clock?
6 o'clock every night. Showtime is 7:30.
So, of course, it's previews for the next few nights. So Tuesday night with previews, and then the official opening is Friday.
Right.
And gates open at 6.
Yes. Come now while it's cool.
That's right.
It's, you know, actually the park is cooler than other places, generally speaking, because we're kind of in a hollow.
It really is.
It's surprising down in the bowl once the sun goes down. But, you know, the earlier in June you come, the cooler it is. So some people wait until the end of the run, and then it gets more full and busy and usually a little warmer.
But the great thing is that, you know, while I'm have to be on stage under lights and leather jackets and boots and tights, people who come can wear cut-off shorts and flip-flops and tank tops and, you know, cover themselves in frozen grapes. And, you know, it's when I've gone to the festival the years that I haven't done it, I mean, it doesn't matter what the temperature is. It's a magical experience. You're under the sky and there's fireflies flying around, and it really is magical. It's, you know, and with Hamlet, there's a part where he's, you know, in the "What a piece of work is man" speech, is a man. He's, you know, he says, this majestical roof fretted with gold and fire. Mm-hmm. And we, the actors and the audience, can actually look up and see the majestical roof fretted with gold and fire. Gosh.
Yes.
Beautiful. So awesome.
And this week, with these incredibly cool and breezy nights and a full moon over our heads, it's been very inspirational.
Oh, yeah. The breezy is probably welcomed for the actors.
Oh, yeah. I would imagine. Of course.
And the biggest challenge is not to get that insect in your mouth. Last night it was real close for Nathan. This big thing was coming as I took off.
Carol Burnett said she once swallowed a moth at Starlight, so you could probably identify with that.
It's protein.
Really? Yeah. Oh my gosh.
I swallowed a bug just last night.
Is it good?
Nope.
No,
kind of horrible, but
it begins tomorrow night. It runs through July the 2nd. Shakespeare's Hamlet, the Heart of America Shakespeare Festival, Southmoreland Park, just to the west of the Nelson Atkins Museum of Art. Thanks so much for being with us. Sydney Garrett, the director of the show and executive artistic director of the Shakespeare Festival, 25 years, not all 25 with Sid. Not all 25.
No.
But quite a few.
Quite a few.
Yeah. I won't ask her. Jen Rogge, who plays the role of Queen Gertrude. ask her about her background. Ask her about Cornell University and things like that. Impressive.
It was really nice. I got to do it for 3 years and teach and then be part of the production.
It's an Ivy League school. So.
Yeah, it was lovely. And we had these students that were... that had the bug. They really wanted to do theater, and it was a good outlet for the other part of their brain. But these are kids that are mathematicians and engineers, and they were just extremely smart and artistic. So it was kind of cool.
Thanks for being here once again. She is one of the shareholders, or as I like to say, the owners of the Green Bay Packers. And that's true, because they sell shares. So that's how it works.
Right.
And Jake Walker, who plays the role of Horatio, all in the Heart of America Shakespeare production of Hamlet, running through July the 2nd at Southmoreland Park. Thank you all so much for being with us.
Thank you, Michael.
We're going to take a break. When we return, we're going to talk about Bloomsday. That is the day where they celebrate with Vance the life of James Joyce, who wrote Ulysses, among other things, and they have readings planned and all that. We'll find out all about that when we return. You're listening to the Arts Magazine radio program right here on KKFI, 90.1 FM.
Freeze Frame!
Hi, I'm Russ Simmons with Freeze Frame, KKFI's weekly look at the newest cinematic fare at your local theaters. Acclaimed British filmmaker Ken Loach is known for his realistic kitchen sink dramas that focus on disparities and injustices in contemporary British society. His latest, I, Daniel Blake, is no exception. It won the Palme d'Or at the Cannes Film Festival. Dave Johns plays Daniel, a 59-year-old carpenter who's been sidelined by the death of his wife and his own heart disease. He has to fight the system when the medical pros refuse to allow him to work, but the government bureaucrats won't give him benefits unless he proves he's seeking employment. It's powerfully acted, believable, and heartbreaking. Oscar winner Rachel Weisz carries the day with her sly performance in the new adaptation of Daphne du Maurier's classic gothic novel, My Cousin Rachel. Is she an innocent widow or a manipulating murderer? Sam Claflin, a naive but wealthy young heir, can't tell the difference because he's fallen in love with her. Although handsomely mounted and respectably done, this intriguing mystery isn't quite as riveting as it should have been. Kate Mara stars in Megan Levy, the true story of a Marine corporal, her combat dog, and their heroic exploits serving in Iraq. While it covers familiar territory, this likable drama should appeal to both dog lovers and fans of military films. Also opening this week, Tom Cruise stars in The Mummy, which Universal Studios hopes will be the first in a series called The Dark Universe that revives their classic horror titles. It Comes at Night is a horror drama starring Joel Edgerton about two families that come into conflict in a post-apocalyptic world. The Hunter's Prey is about an assassin, played by Sam Worthington, who decides to work alongside one of his intended targets. I Love You Both is a comic drama about twins, a young man and his sister, who begin dating the same guy. Well, that's it for this edition of Freeze Frame. Until next time, I'm Russ Simmons with Fox 4 and KKFI FM.
Freeze Frame!
You can hear Russ on Friday mornings on Fox 4 Kansas City, where he'll be doing movie reviews then, as well as on the Freeze Frame feature and the Take 2 feature, all here on KKFI. Thanks to Russ for doing all of that. Well, welcome back to the Arts Magazine show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station right here in Kansas City. I'm Michael Hogue, your host. We're going to talk about an interesting event coming up. There may be more involved than what I have written down, but I have down Friday, June 16th at 6:30 p.m. at the Irish Center, also called Drexel Hall at Linwood in Baltimore. They will be having a Bloomsday event. For those of you who aren't familiar, what in the heck is Bloomsday? But that has to do with what our guest is going to talk about. Tom Shaver is with us. He is the organizer of these annual Bloomsday events, and you have things going on all day long on that day, don't you?
That's right, Michael. We started this in 1995 when I had Bloomsday Books in the Brookside area. And I was always an admirer of James Joyce and Irish literature. And so we thought that would be a great name for the store. And why not celebrate Bloomsday like they do around the world? They've been doing this since 1954. Mm-hmm. And this year it's going to be, as you said, at Drexel Hall. We're pretty excited about it. This is the second year we've been at the Irish Center at Drexel Hall. We used to do it at Union Station and then before that at various pubs in the city.
Well, this is an international event called Bloomsday.
That's right.
I guess my first question would be, why did they call it Bloomsday? Is there a reason behind that?
Absolutely. The protagonist of James Joyce's novel, Ulysses, is Leopold Bloom.
Aha.
And in 1924, the book was published in 1922 in Paris. Sylvia Beach with Shakespeare and Company, her little bookstore in Paris, had a lot of guts to publish that book then. 2 years later, they were celebrating the publication, and someone called it, well, this is Bloomsday today. It's June 16th. Uh-huh. That's the same day that the novel is set. And they didn't really celebrate Bloomsday after that until 1954, after James Joyce had passed away in 42. But two Irish fellows, Flann O'Brien and a guy named Kavanagh, put together a little group, and they went around Dublin, and they got horrendously drunk and touched all the bases, or half of the bases in the novel, before some of them started passing out. At any rate, after 1954, Samuel Beckett and some other admirers of James Joyce decided to continue the tradition. And it began in Dublin and has spread throughout the world. You can go to Kabul, Afghanistan. They will be reading Ulysses.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about Ulysses. People who don't know much about it will probably be saying, well, what is there about Ulysses and James Joyce that is so important to the Irish heritage and Irish culture? You even named your bookstore.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, It's very simple in one sense, and then obviously very difficult in others. And some have called it the greatest novel that no one has ever read.
Oh, now I don't know about that.
But
we read it in school.
Yeah, and it needs to be studied and enjoyed. And yet it's this marvelous take on humanity. Simply enough, it's about a guy named Leopold Bloom, who's an advertising salesman for a newspaper. And he walks around Dublin for 24 hours on an odyssey of his own. It's kind of based on Homer's Ulysses, except you've got a man called Leopold Bloom who is in many ways an alien in his city. He's Jewish. He's an outsider in one sense, but he's every man in another. And so he goes on this odyssey to sell newspaper ads, and he knows that his wife, Molly, is having an affair that afternoon. That is part of it. He goes to various places. He has adventures. And after 24 hours, he finds home. It's a man's search for home. And he finds Molly back in her bed. She does this marvelous, marvelous speech. In the novel, it's about 44 pages long, a stream of consciousness. And it just covers about everything about what women are, what they are, the Earth Mother, the slattern, the adulteress, and the admirer of her husband. After all is said and done, Leopold Bloom returns home and finds home.
Yeah.
There's so much more to it. I mean, there's the character of Stephen Dedalus, who is really pretty much based on the young James Joyce, who finds as a mentor Leopold Bloom in the last half of the book. And what we do in our play is celebrate pretty much the last eight chapters of Ulysses.
Yeah, well, it's probably much too long to do a lot of it, unless, I don't know, unless you would simplify or do a characterization or something like that.
Yeah, it's an adaptation. It was done by a Professor Larry Opitz of Skidmore College. And in 1995, we at Bloomsday would read the entire novel. It would take us about 28 hours straight through with volunteers, customers, reading in a half hour at a time. We would have Guinness and all kinds of other intoxicants and just had a great party. The following year, this wonderful woman named Sylvia Stoner, now Sylvia Stoner Hawkins, she married Wayne Hawkins, another musician, she noticed my store and the name Bloomsday, and she says, is that based on Ulysses? And I said, yeah. She says, well, my professor at Skidmore College in upstate New York has this play. Would you like to do it? And she became, in effect, the director and the producer of it after that. And we gathered equity actors and gifted amateurs, let's say enthusiastic amateurs,
sure.
And proceeded to read the script. It's a script in hand to play.
Yeah. So you've been doing this for how long?
This is our 22nd year.
Yeah. And I guess you started in your bookstore, but you've mm-hmm. progressed to several other places.
Yes.
I've seen notices over the years.
Yeah, we've done it at O'Dowd's. One year, the Literary Festival was staged on the Country Club Plaza. And we had a great time doing that. We had Larry Kerwin and Malachi McCourt that were visiting Kansas City at that time. Larry Kerwin is the organizer of Black 47, a great rock and roll, Irish rock and roll band out of New York. And Malachi McCourt, of course, was the brother of Frank McCourt, who's a real personality in his own right. And those two guys started things off at O'Dowd's, and then we went off and toured the plaza doing scenes from the play at various parts of the plaza. And that was a lot of fun. And the bystanders just had no idea what was going on, but we sure had. It was a hoot.
Now, this is important to Irish heritage and all that goes with that.
It is. And one of the things about Irish literature and the Irish heritage in Kansas City, we're a very Irish town, and because of the railroads that came through. A lot of Irishmen came here to build the railroads. And it's the Kansas City Irish Center. I've got to throw out thanks to Nancy Wormington and Renata Rua, who run the place. They've done a tremendous job of celebrating Irish heritage. It's not just the parade. It's not just slamming back a lot of beer.
Yeah.
It's so much more than that. And our director this year is Katie Gilchrist, who is starting an Irish repertory theater. So there will be other plays that she will be directing.
I noticed that. So she is going to be doing Irish-themed productions mm-hmm. at a particular locale. Do we know how far along the plan is?
Well, we'll be used as a base at the Irish Center.
The Irish Center, okay.
Yeah, and it's such a great hall. I mean, it's big. But we've lost some of the intimacy that we used to have in years past when people were crawling all over themselves in my bookstore in Brookside. But, it's pretty neat. And this year we're going to have a great sound system. We've got Eddie Delahunt and Gabriel Reyes will be performing as they have every year. There was one year that Eddie missed, but other than that, he's performed every year. I can't say enough about him. So he will be performing Irish music at 5 o'clock prior to the play at 6:30.
Yeah, sounds like it's going to be an interesting extravaganza going on.
Yeah.
You told me earlier off the air, based on the last 8 chapters of the book?
Yes, there's several scenes. Two of them in a bar, one of them in a hospital, and then one of them in Molly Bloom's bed.
And is that where the 44 pages come in?
Yeah. Well, it won't be 44 pages that she's doing. She's just going to do the highlights or the lowlights because it's pretty raucous and raw in parts. We always suggest that don't bring your under 17-year-olds to it. It covers pretty much the last 8 chapters. The Sirens, the Cyclops, Nausicaa, the Oxen of the Sun, Circe, Eumaeus, and then the final act with Molly Bloom, where she ends up with this great affirmation of life. Yes, I said yes, I will, yes.
Now, do you have a list of the performers? I'd love to know, for instance, who's playing Molly Bloom.
I don't know who's I'm pretty sure Katie will have a role in that. Now, we've done in years past, which I think has been extremely effective, is have 3 women be Molly so that they alternate the lines toward the end. It's a It's a long stream of consciousness bit, and I think it goes on for about 15 minutes. But by the end, you have the three mollies that pitch in with the alternating lines, and it's very powerful when they get to the end. In 2004, we had a wonderful event. It was the centennial of the setting of the novel. June 16th, 1904 is when it's set. And so in 2004, we had it. It was at the outside of our shop in the Crestwood Shops in Brookside. And we had a huge tent. It was during the day. We had all kinds of Irish dancers and Irish singers. We had we went through about 16 kegs of Boulevard that year. They provided the beer for us, bless their hearts. And Emmanuel Langlade at Aixois, the French Bistro, provided some food. But we just had a tremendous, tremendous time. There was one scene where the readers were a dog barks in the distance, right on cue. Somebody walking their dog on the trolley trail barks. The dog barks. Yeah, that was one of those moments. And then by the very end, when the three mollies are doing their very last bit, I'm looking out to the north, and I see this incredible storm brewing. The wind is blowing down trees on the trolley trail, and no one in the tent of about 400 people know what's coming. And they get the ladies finish their yes, I said, yes, I will, yes, and boom, right on point. The wind literally knocks them off the stage, and we all have to run back into the bookstore in this pounding rainstorm.
Some things are just destined to happen, Tom.
I'm so glad it didn't happen 3 minutes earlier. Let's put it that way.
We're speaking with Tom Schauber. He is the organizer of the annual Bloomsday events. Bloomsday, of course, I guess celebrating, is that a good word to use?
It is a celebration, yeah. It is a celebration of James Joyce, the Irish arts. And again, it's celebrated around the world. We show a documentary at 4 o'clock, which was...
Let's go through the day then. Does something start as earlier as 10 a.m.? That's what I have down here.
Yeah, at 10 a.m., it's a pay on to the last... when we used to do the 27-hour marathon reading, we will read from the book itself. So people will read for a half hour, pass it on to the next one from 10 o'clock until 4 o'clock. At 4 o'clock, we have a really neat documentary, a movie that was done in 2004 on the centennial. And it shows the celebration, how it's celebrated in Dublin and around the world, in Japan, and Kansas City gets a spot in that. Yeah. Malachi McCourt, some other actors talk about what it means to them. And then at 5 o'clock, Eddie Delahunt and Gabriel Reyes come and perform. And they will perform from 5 until 6:30, when the play will start promptly at 6:30.
Yeah. Now, this will happen on the 16th, this coming Friday, the 16th. The actual play reading starts at 6:30, but as Thomas just said, some of the events are as early as 10. This is all at the Irish Center?
Yes, it's at the Irish Center at Drexel Hall. In years past, it's been at the Union Station in our old place, but yeah, it's at Drexel Hall. Also, it's a not-for-profit. We're sponsored by the Kansas City Irish Center and the Irish Fest. They've just been great throughout the years in promoting this. So it's a not-for-profit, and admission would be free because of that.
Well, that's a great promotion for the Irish Festival, of course. It's all kind of tying it all together.
Yeah, it's one of the reasons the Irish Fest takes place. They just do a tremendous job, those people. I was on the original committee way back when we started in Brookside, and it was right behind my bookstore. When we were in Brookside, and we had the parking lot. And since then, it's grown to that huge event at Crown Center.
Yeah, it really is. A lot of things going on this Friday. If you tuned in late, Bloomsday is a celebration of the life, the event, the work, shall we say, of James Joyce. And they're reading from Ulysses, but he has other books. And as a bookstore owner, you...
Dubliners. If you want to get introduced to him, Dubliners is just wonderful. Another thing is to read Ulysses, I have a book that I go to constantly called Introducing Joyce by David Norris, and it's really a cartoon book, but you learn so much that you would miss otherwise. There are so many other ones like that that are that help you understand it. I mean, the classic, just get a what do you call those yellow books? James Joyce's Ulysses by Stuart Gilbert is another one. It helps to have that to understand and not to be intimidated. And if part of it bores you, go on to the next part, because there's always something. Every chapter is written in a different style. In one scene where he talks about the wind, he gets into newspaper writing, and he writes it as a newspaper reporter would write that chapter.
Uh-huh.
It's that kind of thing. He's playing with words. Some of it is hilarious. The Molly Bloom segment at the end is just, I think, the last two pages, read those, because I think it's the most beautiful writing in the English language.
Does he cover event in some of his other books, at least? Perhaps in this one as well. I'm trying to remember. We read it in school, but that was a long time ago.
Portrait of the Artist as a Young Man is about Stephen Dedalus, who later shows up, obviously, in Ulysses.
So the characters do continue. Probably the best way to do it, because you get the reader's hook that way.
Yeah.
Whatever happened to this person?
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Well, Stephen Dedalus is pretty much James Joyce as a young, arrogant young man who doesn't know what he needs to know. And Leopold Bloom, to some extent, is James Joyce as an older man who is mentoring this young man who he encounters after the midway part of the book in a bawdy house.
Yeah. Well,
and then there was Finnegan's Wake, of course, which I still have difficulty getting past the first three pages. But
is that because of the perhaps political slant?
Not the political slant. It's just a very, very difficult book, and it's just extremely difficult. But again, there are segments of it that I love to read. But again, it's something that I have yet to come close to finishing. Let's put it that way. But Ulysses, I haven't. I mean, in this case, you don't have to read Ulysses. Just come down to the Irish Center on Friday, and we'll do it for you. Uh-huh. So you can claim and tell everybody that you know what it's all about, and just impress your friends and relatives to no end.
The reading of the last eight chapters is this Friday, June 16th at 6:30 p.m. at the Irish Center, referred to as Drexel Hall. It's at Linwood and Baltimore,
mm-hmm.
and it's a nice building. And they're essentially going to, you told me earlier, essentially it's the last eight chapters of the book you listed.
Pretty much, yeah. It is. And there's parking, nice parking there, and there's also parking across the street at the McGillies funeral home, which they are very nice to let us use, unless there's a funeral.
Unless there's an Irish funeral going on.
Yeah.
Some of the same people may be over there for that. We know the Irish in their wakes.
They love the wakes.
They do.
Yeah.
They do. Yeah, you talked earlier about the Irish heritage in Kansas City. Is it the biggest white European culture in the area?
Oh.
It's probably close. There's quite a few Italian-Americans in the area as well.
Yeah, but on St. Paddy's Day, everybody claims a bit of it.
Sure. Well, sure.
Yeah, my background is on my father's side was German, but my mother was Fitzpatrick. So, you know, we play that for all it's worth. But everybody has a touch of the Blarney in them.
Sure.
Everybody has a touch of green in them, and those that don't wish they had.
So. Does your bookstore, is it bookstore still around?
No, after 15 wonderful years, I closed the bookshop and sold online for a while, and now I write murder mysteries sat at a used bookstore in Brookside.
You write murder mysteries?
Yeah.
What are some of your titles?
The Dirty Book Murder, Left Turn at Paradise, and The Widow's Son. And it's published by Random House.
Where can these be obtained?
You can get e-books. You can order them on e-books, but it's through the Penguin Random House and the Alibi section of it.
Do you find yourself, perhaps, you're a big fan of Joyce, obviously. Do you find yourself trying to emulate in some respects? Or are you, is this strictly Tom Shaver writing these mystery books?
It's strictly Tom Shaver. Yeah, the character Michael Bevan and I have a lot in common, except for the, yeah. We have a lot in common. I mean, I had some wonderful experiences in that bookshop. I was an attorney for 20-some years prior to that, and I've got to say those 15 years as a bookshop owner was the most fun I've ever had.
You sound like you went from the stress of an attorney, yeah, perhaps, to the more the low-key bookshop. Not that there isn't difficulties in operating a store.
I enjoyed practicing law, got the kids through college, but the thing that I tell people this all the time, that people, when I was practicing law, would bring their troubles into the door.
Yes.
When I opened a bookshop, they left them at the door, and it was a nice change of pace.
Okay, let's review once again, as we're running out of time. The reading is at 6:30 at the Irish Center, Drexel Hall, Linwood, and Baltimore, but events start as early as 10 a.m., mm-hmm, and you mentioned an event at 10 a.m.,
Yeah, the reading of the novel is at 10 a.m.
Oh.
And it goes on until 4. That things really pick up around 4 o'clock with the documentary, then Eddie Delahunt playing, and then the play itself is at 6:30. So, it's a script-in-hand play where we have a mixture of amateurs and equity actors.
Okay, so reading begins at 10 and will last throughout the day. Mm-hmm. The script-in-hand part will begin then at 6:30.
At 6:30.
With the band in between at, what did you say, 5?
Yeah. Eddie starts at 5.
Okay. Oh, so events throughout the day, beginning as early as 10 a.m. At the Irish Center, Drexel Hall in Linwood, in Baltimore. And this, of course, is on Bloom's Day, which is Friday, June the 16th. Tom Shaver is with us. I want to thank him for being here, the organizer of the annual Bloom's Day events. If you're a fan of James Joyce, or you want to learn more about him or some of his works, might be worthwhile checking this out.
Well, thank you very much, Michael.
Thank you, Tom. Thanks very much for coming in and enlightening us on this Irish-American slant on things going on. Nice to have you here.
Thank you, Sancha.
The Jazz Insider is next. He'll be playing some great jazz. We'll have jazz from 1 to 3, then we'll have the blues from 3 to 6 right here on your community radio station, 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City's community radio. So until next we meet, ladies and gentlemen, at that cross of the road, I'm Michael Hogue. We'll see you next time.